League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are at Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 321. And Donna's back. Not very much tanner, though.
No, just my melasma on my forehead. It did get some sun, but everything else, not so much. But also, Tiffany was like the sunscreen queen. That was hard for me to say. But like every like 10 minutes, she's like, let's go again. But I'm thankful because I didn't get burnt. Did I get blisters on my feet? Yes.
Really? What shoes were you wearing?
Those damn pink water shoes. Well, they're not water shoes, yeah. But those sandals.
When you first start wearing those, the first like couple of times in the summer, yes, they did that to me not too long ago, too.
One of them, because, you know, one foot swells more than the other. Uh-huh. So I have a little...
Meanwhile, if this is your first ever episode, you have no clue what we're fucking talking about. Donna just got back from a cruise.
Woohoo! So we had dinner tonight, so I like was telling her some things, but I had to be selective because some things I just have to like have your genuine reaction to, you know? Okay. But okay, so we go to the beach, right? There's not a lot of people there, thank God, because, you know, like the other one, Mr. Sancho's or whatever, it's like the party one, and I'm like, y'all have the party all you want. Like, I just want pool, beach, and like some water. You know what I mean? Like, let's just chill. I don't want to see like a wet t-shirt contest and all the things. You know what I mean? Like, I'm glad you're having fun, but like,
this is not what you want. You're on like a chill vacation. You're not on a party vacation.
Right. Mostly because I can't drink. So it's like, that ain't fun when you're not drunk, you know? We get there. We're like, yeah, this is like a great turnout. Like all the things. We go to the beach and one, sand is hard. How do people like the Navy SEALs, all the people who can run in sand? I'm like, y'all are fucking strong as fuck.
Yeah, walking in sand is exhausting.
I feel like the heavier you are, the harder it is because you just sink into it. Like my ankles disappeared. You know what I mean? Like, it's like...
Well, to be fair, you're pretty pale right now.
That took me way too long.
If y'all could have seen her face of like panic trying to figure out what I mean.
Yeah, I was like, pale because... Oh,
like you're like picturing like a pale.
Yeah. You know me.
No, I'm just giving her a hard time because Donna is Hispanic and that lupus done did her in though. Cause she is very pale now.
I'm gray. That's what I am. So we're walking, but also like I'm looking at other people and they're not sinking all the way down into the sand. And I'm like, I'm having to raise my little legs high to get off of the sand. Anyway, we get there and the water's beautiful. So that's a huge plus for me. There's not a lot of seaweed. So I was like, I'm going to get in the water. Like, let's go. And so everyone's like, what? We go down and there's like a kind of like a shelf. Like you go down. So I was like, keep in mind going up that thing, right?
Yeah.
Because I was like, I'm about to sink down like when I'm trying to get in the water. But at least you're in the water. So it's like, fine. Everything's great. I'm up to like my boobs. That's huge for me. You know what I mean? And... having fun, had me a water, had me a virgin daiquiri in one hand, you know? So I'm like double fist in it, right? And then we're like, let's eat something. So we're going back up. And Margarita was with me. Tiffany had already went back up. Margarita was coming up with me. And she was like, we'll hold on to each other going up this thing. And I'm like, okay, cool. But I have two drinks too. So it's like, I'm not like.
And she got the nickname Bahama Mama while y'all were there.
She did, yes. But she didn't have the Bahama Mamas right then.
Okay.
She was good to go, but she went down because I did too. I pulled her down in the sand. My legs were eaten by the sand. And I was like, I'm going down. But I held my drinks like a pure pro. Like the drinks didn't mess up. So So this lady who was just like lounging in one of the like lower things, what do you call them? Chairs, you know, like that your feet are in the water. How can you get that low and get back up? I don't know.
I can get that low. I can't get back up that from that low.
And she did because she jumped up and she was like, here, I'll get your drinks. And I was like, okay, thanks. So I'm like cracking up because I like, don't fall. And then it was like, and I'm falling.
Yeah. You know?
So Margaret is like, I'll help you up. So I was like, okay. And I went to do it. And then I pulled her down. And Caitlin fell beside me. And I like was cracking up. And I was like, Tiffany, because she was up. Like we were close, you know?
Yeah.
And she said, I'm coming.
Meanwhile, you're stone cold sober because you can't drink.
Yeah, I'm completely sober. But she said all she hears is me cracking up because it was funny as fuck. Because it was like, I'm up, I'm down. But it didn't hurt because it was like on the sand,
yeah,
you know, and in the water. But, and like, I mean, I'm just cracking up. And the lady was like, you could just crawl. And I was like, I don't think I can get up if it's not in the water. If I crawl on that fucking sand, like, it ain't happening. But fell. Tiffany was like, I'm so glad that wasn't me. I would have died. And I was like, no, that was fucking funny. Like, yeah. It's fine, you know, and like, whatever, you know. Now, did I get back in the water after that? No, because I was like,
really?
I'm not probably going to be able to get back out again. Because after that, I had ate and everything else. I was like, no, no, no. But also, Tiffany was like, I kind of want to go to the pool. So then, like, we ended up going up to the pool and stuff.
That you can get out of.
That. And they had, like, stairs. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to have trouble. But, yeah, so there went that. I was like, poor Margarita. She was just trying to help, and I pulled her down. So
figuratively and what's the other version of that? Real life?
I don't fucking know.
What is the other word for that?
Figuratively and literally.
Literally.
God. We say that all the fucking time and not correctly, and we couldn't remember it in the correct sense. But okay, so then you said Margarita was Bahama Mama.
Mm-hmm.
Tiffany, her alter ego was Tammy Lynn. Because Corey, who went with us, so where we were by the pool, there was a little smoking area. And so Tiffany was kind of close to that. And so she was over there. And Corey was asking where Tammy was. And Margarita was like, Tiffany? And he was like, yeah. I'm so sorry. Like, whatever. So then that was like Tammy.
Yeah.
And then like to be even countryer, it was Tammy Lynn.
Yeah.
You know, and so all the things. So that was her the whole time. So like when she like had people take shots and stuff, it wasn't her. It was Tammy Lynn.
Yeah.
You know, like. But then she did get sick. And so she said Tammy Lynn died. No more Tammy Lynn. But then, okay, so you know when you go onto the ship and you have to do the muster station?
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was like talking, because we were trying to find the right one to go to, and I talked to this older man. I was like, oh yeah, we're looking for the muster station. Like, because I couldn't remember which one was right.
Yeah.
So it was like muster. Like, maybe you don't hear it. Maybe you do. I don't know. But so he told us where to go. And we go and they were like, is this your first time? No. We have priority on our thing. So she was like, all right. Like they scanned us and went. Like we didn't even have to hear anything. But Natalie and her mom, they're from Canada. And if y'all don't know Natalie, we talked about her before because she has a podcast and we've been on it. But she is the sweetest, most kindest person. We must protect Natalie at all cost. But you know, like when people are so sweet and so everything, they're just a little naive.
Yes.
And that's a little bit of Natalie in the best way possible. And so she does not know how beautiful she is. And they went to their muster station. And
for the record, y'all, it's muster.
It's muster. Yes. But
it is not a condiment.
No. But of course, me thinking, I'm like, that's, I don't know which one it is, but I'm just going to...
And it's spelled different.
Is it?
It mustard, M-U-S-T-U-R-D?
No.
Mustard?
M-U-S-T-A-R-D.
Oh, well, a muster station is
E-R-D. E-R-D.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know how to spell, but I know it's not the same.
Bless. This is us 1,000%.
This is why I could not be on a show like Big Brother, because I have to have access to Google.
Yes. But okay, so Natalie, she has the big tatas, and they were out. You know, she on vacation, you know? She dropped something or, like, went to get something, and the person who was doing her muster station thing said something, okay? And her mom heard her, Miss Rita, love her, but her mom heard her. But Natalie didn't understand what.
So the person doing the mustard station was female?
No.
Oh, well, you just said her mom heard her.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Her mom heard the person.
Okay.
It was a guy, okay? And it was very, like, inappropriate for this guy to say this, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a funny story, so there's that. But Natalie said, I thought he was hungry, and I thought he said, burrito, burrito. He said, bonita, bonita, because when she was, like,
what
bent down,
the fuck?
He said that. And so the mom heard, but Natalie said that she just thought he said burrito, burrito. God,
she is too pure for this world.
She is. But when they went away, Miss Rita was like, he was looking at your chest.
Yeah.
Like, he said, bonita, bonita. And she was like, oh my gosh. So the whole time, like any other time, it'd be like, burrito, burrito. Like, going, anything. But also,
why the fuck did they say that? That's so creepy.
It's so creepy and so inappropriate.
Yes. You know?
But also, like, her mom's there. Obviously, Miss Rita was her mom.
Yes.
You know, so it's like,
oh, what a creepy. I almost said creepster, but he ain't a creepster.
No. No, no, no. So the whole time, burrito, burrito on everything. But also, they were in Progreso, and Natalie said that someone had, like, looked her up and down. Because, again, she's very pretty. But looked her up and down and said, Chiquita Banana or something.
What?
And they were like, what the hell? But they think it was because the lady who does the Chiquita Banana or whatever. But she was like, I don't understand why everyone's hungry.
Who says Chiquita Banana?
I don't know. I have no idea. But like,
is that a thing? Do people say that?
I was like, I don't know what that means. Maybe his banana was banana and I don't know.
Gross.
Right? But okay, so something else happened in Progreso. I was not there. I did not get off the boat there. But my sister, Natalie, Miss Rita, her mom, and Tiffany did, okay? And Miss Rita apparently is my kindred spirit, because if something's going to happen, it's going to happen to her. Mm-hmm. Oh, because while I was laying underneath the palm trees, nature tried to take me out, and one of the palm tree things fell right beside
me. Oh my God.
I was like, what the? Nature hates me. So it's like, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen to me, right? They were crossing the street. There was an overhang, and they were crossing the street, and they heard something, and Miss Rita said, someone threw an egg at me.
What?
And Natalie said that she was kind of like bowed up and said, like, who threw an egg at you? Like, who's egging my mama?
Yeah. Right?
They looked up, and it was a pigeon.
A pigeon shit on her.
No. What? That's what I thought, too. It was an egg. The pigeon had, like,
laid an egg?
Like, kicked the egg off the thing, and it was rotten.
Oh, that's why it kicked it off, because it wanted to dance out of its.
And it hit her. She had just bought a new hat.
No.
Hair on the hat. She said, my hat.
Oh, my God.
It got all over her arm. But she said, like, someone threw an egg at me. But then also, when she's telling the story, she said, you look up and the pigeon's going, whoo. Like, no. And my sister was like, no, it really was, like, looking down me like, gotcha. But I'm like, wait, because I thought it was shit on her too, because I'm like, oh, okay, it's shit. No, it was an egg. Literally kicked the egg out of the nest.
Because it was rotten.
Yes.
How do they know?
I don't know, but I was like, oh my God. So okay, Susan, like, everyone was like, oh, it was, like, rotten, whatever.
Yeah.
But Susan, my sister, did not smell it. And, like, because, you know, she's a fast walker, so she was,
she was probably already back at the boat.
Yeah.
They had, like, already done the excursion and was back at the boat before they even got there.
Yes. So they were shopping, and Tiffany, of course, knocked something off, and I think it was panties. Because I'm, like, listening to this story, and I'm like, wait, you're picking up panties in the shop? Like, what? And she said, like, Tiffany had knocked it off. So when she bent down to, like, pick it up to put it back in there, she said, oh, my God, y'all, I think that they killed something. I don't know what they did, but they buried something under where these panties were. She's like, this is like cartel stuff. Like, that is a dead body underneath there.
She did not think cartel stuff.
Yes. She's like, oh my God.
God.
And Natalie said, no, that's my mom. And she said, no, it's not. I know a dead body, and that's a dead body.
Tiffany doesn't know a dead body.
Susan. Oh, Susan. Oh. But she does know a dead body.
She does.
But so.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. No, like, Tiffany hit off the panties. My sister went to pick them down.
Got them. Got it.
But she hadn't smelled Miss Rita, because she was, like, kind of
running.
And Natalie's like, no, it's my mom. And Susan was like, they killed something and buried it underneath this place. Like, she was like, well, let me smell you. So she smelled Miss Rita's arm and she's like, oh God, it's you. It's you.
What do you even do? Like, you're in the middle of Progresso. Like, you still have to, like, walk all the way back to the ship, stand in front of, like, the onboarding process with all these people and be like, sorry, guys. A bird egged me. Like, how do you... What the fuck? What the fuck?
But... Oh, God. I wish I had video of Miss Rita being... doing the pigeon thing, because it was so funny. But so Susan and her went to this bathroom and, like, Susan tried to wipe it off as much as possible. But, oh, God, but her being like, no, that's a dead body. Yeah. And Natalie's like, it's my mom.
Well, Susan's such a doer. Like, let me clean you.
Yeah, she is. When they went to the bathroom, though, you had to pay to use the bathroom. And there was an attendant, right?
Yeah.
And they paid like a dollar or something, you know. For it. And my sister said they gave us like 50 cents worth of toilet paper. Like, you had like a sheet of toilet paper to use. And also,
what?
Yeah, there was no seat on the
toilet.
Like, you no, just had to no. hover.
Mm-mm. Wait, that's so. Where did they go in Progresso?
They went like into the city.
Okay.
Because they were going to go to a public beach or something. So, like, they took the bus in. And
Because so they. Because we went to Progresso, but we just went to that little shopping area right when you get off. And it had, like, you could use the bathroom access and all that. And it was not like that.
Yeah. So that's also, like, wow, she's like, they buried something up in here. Yeah. It's like, they're, like, in the city.
They're not in, like, the touristy part.
Yeah. But, oh, my God. I kept, like, looking at Miss Rita and all I could think about is a fucking egg. Someone egged me. But also, just let me say, sorry, I know I'm going on about these, but, like, these are, like, such, like, who gets egged
right
by a fucking bird?
Right.
Also, we won 4 trophies at trivia.
Dang.
I was like, yes. So I have a trophy. But also, you know the gummies, microdose gummies? Mm-hmm. So I did take them. And,
yeah, of course.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that I had those also. But I was a pusher. And I'm like, you want some gummies?
I'm that way too. I'm like, you want one? I share with everybody.
So I did, like, I handed them out because at first they didn't know. I had taken them before dinner, and Susan and Tiffany said they looked over at me, and I was, like, listening so intently to a thing, and they're like, she's feeling it. And so then everyone's like, wait, what'd you do? And I'm like, I took the gummies.
Yeah.
And so then I went back to the room and, like, got them all. Everyone loved them. Everyone could feel them at the thing. So I'm just saying, like, that everyone had a good time on the gummies. But I did it again the next night. And they're like, you did it again? I was like, yeah, but, like, the best time. And, like, it just, like, mellowed me out.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I had a laugh. Like, I was laughing at me laughing and laughing at that more. You know, almost crying because I laughed so hard.
Yeah.
But it was so fun. I wish you were there so you could see the Tammy Lynn of it all.
Y'all had fun, though. I'm glad y'all had fun.
It was. It was a lot of fun. Now I'm fucking tired. Like, I went to work the next day. And, you know, so it was just like...
It's hard going to work the next day after a vacation.
Yes.
Well, before we go any further, we got to talk about Paired. What's Paired, you ask? Well, it's a relationship app for couples. But, you know, you don't have to be romantically involved because Colby and I do it, but so do Donna and Tiffany.
Yeah, it's you and your partner in any stage of your life.
Or any stage of your relationship.
Yes, exactly. And... it could be at the beginning of that relationship because it's something that you can get to know each other by answering these questions and everything. Or, like, if you're married, like Carrie and Colby, it's something that can deepen that connection.
So you and your partner download the app, pair together, i.e. paired. And every single day you get different questions or quizzes. And it's so freaking fun to see what their answers are. Sometimes it's surprising. And then there's also been times where I'm like, okay, we actually don't answer the same on some of these questions. So, like, that's probably an area that we need to talk about a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, because sometimes with the quizzes, it'll say, what's your answer and what do you think your partner's answer is? And sometimes we don't know each other's answers. And it's an area that I'm like, we should know those answers more. So it leads to deeper, further conversation and connection.
Exactly. Especially like with finances, because there was a quiz about finances. And it's good to see like what your partner is thinking, how they think you're going to react to it. And it's an easier way because money is such a touchy subject anyway. But with paired with that quiz that we took, it's just something easier to like ease into it. And it makes it lighter.
Yeah. And then sometimes it's fun stuff. Like one of the more recent ones, share a photo of Colby you recently saw that brought a smile to your face. And like I sent the photo of him on our little lake trip catching like the one fish we caught that's the size of an ant. And he's like holding it up, you know. And then he sent one from our mountain vacation where we're at a restaurant and I'm making a stupid face at him, you know.
Yeah.
So like sometimes it's fun and lighthearted, sometimes it's more sexual, sometimes it's more serious things to the relationship. So you really do get to dive in and get to know one another. And then, you know, they do daily streaks too, so it's fun to keep the streak. And then I get mad when I mess it up, but then I'm like, okay, now we're back on the streak. Okay, I messed it up.
Yes, I know. I told Tiffany, I was like, we're back from the cruise now. We're doing it again. Yeah. We're streaking, girl. We're streaking. But seriously, it's such a fun conversation starter. And honestly, it could be for anything. Like, you know, if you're at dinner and you're like, hey, you want to, like, let's use one of these questions and start a conversation and stuff. Like, you can use it in different areas of your life.
It's so funny, too, to see the different ways we answer questions because, like, I mean, and I mean that me and you, and I mean that me and Colby, because, like, I feel like your answers are like the wordiest.
Yes.
And then mine will sometimes be like more wordy than Colby's, but sometimes I'm very like specific on them. You know what I mean? And then sometimes he's more of like a global answer. And then sometimes I'll like hone in on this one very specific part, you know?
Yeah.
So it can be like so to our personalities.
Yes.
So whether you're a few dates in or you've been together for a long time, it's time to lighten the mood and have fun with your partner using Paired. Head over to paired.com/creep to get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription.
That's paired.com/creep to sign up today. Connect with your partner using Paired every day, and a happier relationship will start here.
Head over to paired.com/creep. Y'all, it had been so long since Donna and I had recorded because we, of course, had to like batch record before she went on her vacation. So we still had episodes come out. And when I turned on my iPad that I use because my eyes suck, even though the eye doctor said my eyes are great, I have to have it big. Anyway, turn that on and like, you know, we're sitting here talking. It takes a minute for like it all to connect into the universe. And when I tell you these text messages started rolling in, like updating, it was like boop, 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 boop.
It's like popcorn from the popcorn maker. Yes. Like it was just like a little kernel, a little, and then, oh my God, get the bowl.
I was like making a face like, holy crap. She's like, what? And I like turned it to her and I was like, look at all these text messages. And they were still like, ding, 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 ding.
This says so much about my personality. I say popcorn and then I'm like, or like a bonus at a casino, like when you're doing, because when like the coins come up and it's just like, diddy, 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 diddy.
Well, since we did have to kind of batch record, we haven't talked about Patreoners in so long. So we got some for you today. Thank you so much, Melissa C. from Oklahoma.
Shelley C. from Alaska.
Marie B. from Missouri.
Gwendolyn E. from Virginia.
Valeria B. from Kentucky.
And Jamie G. from Michigan.
Thank y'all so much for joining Patreon. Sorry if you've waited a bit for an episode shout out. We've got more coming next week too. But if you want an episode shout out just like these peeps and get all the extra content they're getting every single week, head on over to patreon.com/theapcpodcast.
Okay, I have one more story for you from the cruise. Picture it. I had fallen in the ocean, right? We're now, I got attacked by the palm tree.
Yeah.
But we're in the pool and someone calls someone Detroit, like a guy calls a guy Detroit. And Lindsay, who was with us, she's from Michigan.
Yeah.
So she's like, wait, are you from Detroit? And so they start talking. They live like 2 miles away from each other.
What?
Right? Like, what a small fucking world.
Yeah.
Well, then it gets smaller because they're like, y'all aren't all from Michigan, right?
Yeah.
And we're like, no. So we're saying where we're all from, like Mississippi, yeah. Montana, Michigan, New Mexico,
yeah.
Pennsylvania,
Canada,
like Montana. So it's like, how the fuck did y'all get together? How do y'all yeah. know each other? So they're talking about the podcast. Well, then this other guy in the pool is like, wait a minute. My wife listens to you.
You are fucking kidding.
I am not. I am not. So he yells at his wife, and her name is Corey Tingler. And she's like, holy shit, I listened to y'all.
Are you fucking serious?
I am serious. So in Cozumel, they were on our cruise, but we had never seen them or anything. And we're in the pool, and I meet a listener.
Holy shit.
So then later on, she sends an email. So like I had to like swipe it real quick
yeah.
so you wouldn't see it.
Yeah. Yeah, you did that. I didn't see it at all.
Yeah. So hold on.
Fucking swipe or no swipey over there.
So the email she sent was spotted in the wild. And she said, listen to y'all for a while now. And then we're on vacation in Mexico at Paradise Beach. And the Viking, my husband, because he did look like a Viking.
Yeah.
Who maybe had a little too much tequila, meets you and introduces me. What a coincidence. It was awesome meeting you guys. Thank you for all you do, Corey.
Oh, that's so sweet. This is the difference in our personalities. I would have never known that she was there because I don't talk to people.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Also, Margarita was sitting, like, because there was, like, a little ledge in the pool.
Yeah, love those.
Yes. And, I mean, the pool was only, like, 4 feet, so it's not
over
anything.
Your head.
I mean... It was up to my neck. Like, I was like, I couldn't be on my knees, okay?
Like a little seal floating.
Yeah. Caitlin, who's taller, she was like, I'm on my knees. And we were like the same height. And I was like, oh, let me try mine. And I was like, having to hold my breath because it was like right there. But so we're all just like sitting on the ledge. And so the guys are talking to us. So like they come over because we're all talking yeah. about shit. And her husband was up there. And she said, Gabe just looked at me and like did the eyes. And she's like, they're talking. I'm not even talking. But then she was like, they met a listener. But isn't that wild?
That's crazy.
Because, you know, it's just funny because like some people will be like, oh, yeah, cool. Like about the podcast, like whatever. But it was like, no, my wife listens
like,
to y'all.
Props for him knowing what podcast his wife listens to.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Also, someone had said something to Tiffany. And she was like, oh, no, I'm not on the podcast. They just talk about me a lot. But anyway, I had to save that one for last because that blew my mind.
That's like, what a small world.
Yes. Yeah, so thank you so much, Corey and your husband for, you know, saying hey and being so cool and listening. Thank you. All right. This is so weird because we haven't recorded in now, like, I don't know, like a week and a half, and it feels foreign. All
it
right?
really does. It's like we've lost our mojo. I don't know. It's,
yeah.
It's weird.
So I'm going first. Picture it. Baltimore, Maryland, 2008. So I'm talking about the Peremski family. It's Laurel and Brian and their baby girl, Isabella. And she's 5 years old. Now, Laurel said that Isabella was brilliant beyond her years. And even though she was, you know, 5 years old, she didn't seem it. And that might have been because...
Seem it. I thought you said cement, like cement. Oh. But like, you know, we say cement. And so I was yeah. like... She didn't like cement what? Like she yeah. didn't cement what? God, we're from the South.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and well, and I thought you were just talking because you always hate that when I say like kids are wiser than their years because they'll like see something and you're like, they didn't say that the man had
yeah.
this hat, that, this, this, that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, whatever. So I was like, I haven't even got there yet. And you're already mad. But no, you just didn't understand.
I really did not understand.
Again, we haven't done this in like a week and a half, y'all, okay? So she didn't seem it. And maybe it's because she was an only child, so she was more around them as adults. Because I know just personally in my family, when it's only been like one kid, they have been more like adult-like because that's who they hang out with. Also, Isabella was their miracle child because they had come to a point in their life that they really didn't believe they would ever be able to be parents, even though that's what they wanted more than anything. They had sadly lost 3 pregnancies previously, so to say Isabella meant more than life itself to them, like that's not even scratching the surface of how much they loved Isabella. And even though they were a small family, they were outgrowing the apartment that they were living in. Isabella basically was staying in their room still because they just didn't have the room for her. So they began looking for their next house, their dream house. And, you know, they wanted the white picket fence, big yard, all the things, but they also knew their budget. And they knew that they had to make compromises and just find a suitable house. However, after they paid this inspection to be done on this house that they had found, it turned out that it had a lot of structural damage. And the inspector was telling them, like, look, just kind of going off of this, it's going to eventually cost you a lot of money down the road. So, like, you're not just renting this house, you're buying it. So, like, in 10 years, you're going to have to redo all this stuff, you know? So they're like, well, fuck, this wasn't the perfect house, but it was what we could afford. It, you know, it was their future that they were seeing not be attainable now. So, like I said, you know, even though this house wasn't their dream house, it was going to be their starter home or even like their starter to forever home. But all of their hopes, you know, they had put into this, and now this one inspection just crushed them because, again, they could have made it into a home. However, as fate would have it, while they were discussing this with the inspector in the yard, Laurel saw an older man putting a sign out for sale by owner in the house next, like across the street. Every time that I see a for sale sign or like hear that, all I think about is my mama because she'd say for sale. Like, just, you know, it's like one of those things that like, it makes no fucking sense why she would say it.
Yes.
But like, then every time we would see something, we'd be like, for sale, like all the time. And so, I don't know, it was just a joke in my head. This house that was for sale by owner, again, it wasn't their dream house, but it did have a ton of potential. They walked over, talked to the older man, and he offered to let them tour the house. He explained that, you know, they had only been there for a year, but, you know, they were looking to move now and they needed to move soon. And, you know, like they were like, okay, like, you know, it needs some cosmetic work, but like, all right, cool, cool, cool. And then he was like, and I'm going to cover the closing costs too. So they're like, holy fuck, if we don't have to cover that, we can do more of the cosmetic changes immediately instead of having to wait, you know, like the 5 years to be able to do renos. Cause you know how expensive that shit is.
Shit. And what you think of is just like a, well, while we've got the hole in the wall, let's paint the bedroom. Well, while that we're painting, let's get this.
Uh-huh.
Well, now that we're doing this, and it just fucking snowballs.
To the bathroom, to the thing, from the windows, to the walls.
To the sweat is dropping down my balls because I'm fucking doing all this goddamn manual labor.
Yes. So, you know, like their ears perked on that because that would really help them out. You know, again, they were like, holy hell, this is a miracle, just like Isabella was. You know, like, what are the chances that their dreams just got squashed in the one yard? This man's putting up a sign, says like, hey, come tour it. And then, you know, all the things. So they're like, this is meant to be. Because also the house was way cheaper than the others on the market. So it was, you know, priced to sell. So Laurel and Brian kind of looked at each other and they agreed like, hey, this is a gift. We need to take it and be grateful for this twist of fate. Now, like I mentioned, there were things that they needed to fix in the house. If I didn't make it clear enough, they did buy the house. They, of course, started with Isabella's room because this was her first room. And it was just so special to her, to them, because I can only imagine what that feels like as a parent. To be able to provide more for your child and have, you know, like give them something that they haven't had before. So this room was like a deep maroon red color. Like Tiff would have loved this fucking room. But for them, they were like, this ain't the vibe that we want for our 5-year-old. So Brian bought some like gray primer paint to, you know, try to cut the color, you know, whatever, like a good painter would. Me, I'm just like, oh, maybe I can just go over it with one coat, and, you know, like, But he was ready, but it didn't help. Like, the red would just show through, and it kind of showed through in an eerie way. Like, it basically looked like blood stains had, like, dripped down the wall of how it, like, would come through that primer. It ended up taking 4 coats of the primer to cover the red. But after all that weirdness, things were fine. And really, it's not like weird. It's just like, motherfuck, why'd they have to pick this deep color? You know? Well, all of them settled into the house quickly and everything was great. Isabella really thrived, it seemed, now that she had her own room and her own space, you know, and not that she wasn't thriving before, she just seemed to blossom with her own space. Brian said he noticed that every time Isabella would go upstairs or something, she would wave at the attic door that was in the ceiling, you know, the kind that has like the cord you pull down.
Yeah.
That's what they had. But he was like, okay, she's just quirky or a kid, you know, like it's something that they didn't have in their apartment. So maybe she was just like, hey, something new, and like just waved. Maybe she thought, you know, whatever, she's five. But after a bit more time, Brian told Laurel that Isabella seemed to have an imaginary friend. Like it had to be that. And they both thought it was kind of endearing and cute. And Laurel said that soon after it was brought to her attention by Brian, she did hear Isabella talking and singing in her room, you know, and so she was like, okay. And finally, they asked her about it, and she said her friend's name was Emily. They played into it, you know, like fixing Emily a sandwich for lunch as well. Like, does Emily need a place to sit? You know, all the things. They didn't think it was anything more than Isabella's imagination and her being an only child and being lonely, a new place, you know, and it was like her coping mechanism. However, one day while Laurel was in the kitchen, Emily was playing in the dining room nearby, and all of a sudden there was this loud clang and a bang, and when Laurel rushed in to see what had happened, she saw the door on the hutch opened, and one of her statues was smashed on the ground. Laurel was shocked to see this, but Isabella was like, it's not me, it wasn't me, it wasn't me. It was Emily. And then chills ran down Laurel's spine, because Isabella said that Emily didn't want her to be there. She didn't like her mom. And so that's freaky, but it also made her mad because she just assumed this was Isabella doing it. And like, what the hell, you little brat, saying you don't like your mom and you don't want me here.
Yeah.
Like, and why did you smash my statue? Like, you know, and I'm sure Isabella got in trouble and shit. And that was that, you know. Again, just like, why is she using this imaginary friend as a coping mechanism? But also she's a kid, so, you know, whatever. But soon Brian and Laurel noticed that Isabella was playing more in her room and she was a bit more like withdrawn. So she would stay in her room more. Also, it's like maybe she's just getting older and she didn't want to be with her parents all the time while they were home because she now did have her own room. Isabella also started singing Mary Had a Little Lamb. And when Laurel heard this, she was like, wait, how does she know this song? Because they had never taught her that song. Also, I'm like, how do you not teach your kid this song?
Right.
But remember, on Sister Act, she didn't know Mary Had a Little Lamb either.
Seems like a factual piece of life and not a movie.
But also, that reminds me, I just listened to the Sinister Sightings where you're talking about your imaginary boyfriend that you had that you watched
what?
TV with on the couch. But again, I cracked up because if y'all haven't listened to that Sinister Sightings, you have to go. It was two Thursdays ago. Like while we're recording this, it was last Thursday. But Carrie said it so matter-of-factly that they were watching Sister Act and she would hold his hand. And I'm like, holy fuck, like you like held his hand, like, damn, I just had an imaginary like guy there. And she was like, said something about, yeah, my parents must have thought I was real weird. And I said, or forward. And she's like, no, he was imaginary. And I was like, wait, I thought y'all were watching Sister Act. And she's like, no, like we were, but he wasn't there.
Yeah.
But I was dying at that again because I was like, well, y'all went to church together and it's Sister Act.
True.
But you're like, yeah, Dolores Van Cartier. It cracked me up so much. I listened to it twice while I was listening
really?
To it. Yes, because it's just how you were telling it. And I was like so fucking into it because I'm like, damn, me too. I used to pretend like I had a guy or whatever. And then I was like, damn, Carrie, I always got to one up me. And actually, you like have a guy that she's like watching this movie with. And then it's like, nah, bitch, she just like me.
Yes. loser.
Oh, gosh. Anyway, Isabella started singing Mary Had a Little Lamb, and they were like, what the fuck? So Laurel asked where she heard it from, because again, I mean, it's 2008, so TV is a thing, and you know, you can hear it on all the different things. But Isabella said that she was learning it. And so she's like, okay, but where are you learning this? And she said, from Emily. And so again, she just kind of shrugged it off, like, okay, probably from the TV or something, like, who knows? Because like, so many shows like will use those little nursery rhymes to like help teach shit, you know? But Brian said the first time that he actually felt uncomfortable was when he was in the bathroom. He was brushing his teeth, and he said he just couldn't shake the sense of someone watching him. And then he felt a tug at the bottom of his shirt, kind of like a kid would do. So he thought it was Isabella, but no one was there when he looked. And he even called out her name, looked down the hall, but no one was there. And just when he was about to just shake it off as his own imagination, he saw a shadow dart in his peripheral vision in the hallway. And I know I can't say that right. And I like tried.
I think you did.
Did I?
I honestly, I don't know. Okay. But I think you did.
Y'all let us know then, please. He said the shadow was like darting down the hall, like running. But there's nothing that could have caused it. Because at first she was like, well, maybe what happened was like a car turned and like, in the neighborhood, the light kind of, you know, all the things. But then when he's like standing there, he's like, wait, there's no way that the car, if it turned into the neighborhood, that it would shine a light here. And so he's like, I don't know what I just saw, but like, again, it's late. I'm brushing my teeth to go to bed. Just had a long day. So fast forward a bit, and Isabella came running through the door, and she was obviously upset and scared. And all she could get out was Emily's mommy hurt her in the bathtub. So Laurel and Isabella ran into the bathroom where Isabella had come from, but there was nothing there. And so Laurel was just baffled at how Isabella was like learning this kind of stuff. She's like, she's five. Like, why would she know that a mommy could hurt someone in the bathtub or whatever? She's like, I don't understand that. But I'm like, have you read Hansel and Gretel and shit? Like,
true.
The stepmoms and shit were rough as fuck. All right. So again, I'm just like, I don't know what they taught their daughter. Maybe they didn't do the fairy tale stuff. And maybe, you know, I don't know. They didn't do Mary Had a Little Lamb. Who knows? She was just like, that's not okay. And Isabella, you need to say goodbye to Emily. Like, she needs to leave now. Like, you know. Like, get the fuck out. Leave her alone. Say goodbye. But Laurel was just so confused as to, like, how this imaginary friend had turned into this scary thing. You know, at first it was cute and something sweet, but now it was definitely not sweet. And then she's like, okay, but if this really is just her imagination, why is Isabella, like, thinking these dark thoughts? And, like, what's put her in this mindset? Laurel contemplated taking Isabella to a doctor, like a psychiatrist, but then she just decided to take her to her pediatrician. Because again, she's like, she's just a fucking kid, but also this just isn't her. After talking to the doctor, Laurel felt better because the doctor had like talked to Isabella and she's like, yeah, Emily's my friend, you know, and just like normal stuff. And the pediatrician was like, yeah, kids have these all the time. Like, it's fine. Like, they're, you know, like, she's not bruised. She's not doing anything. She's not harming herself, anything. Like, it's fine. Just let her have her friend. She'll grow out of it. Laurel was like, okay, like, I was making too big of a deal about this. Like, who knows? But fast forward, they were all just out having a good day outside the house. No one had mentioned Emily or anything. However, when they returned home, Brian was carrying Isabella. And she was just like talking about the day, talking about how much fun she was having. Like, picture me just like incessantly talking about my cruise. That was her about the day that they had. But when they entered the house, Isabella just shut down and just got so quiet. And about that moment, they walked into the living room and they found all of the photos from their wall piled up on top of each other on the floor. And they were all photos like of them as a family, you know? So it just kind of seemed threatening and very unnerving. Like this was a message. Like, and who could have done this? They were all out together. And even if Isabella had come into the house, she wasn't tall enough to reach them on the walls where they were. And she's fucking five. And, you know, who's going to be able to do like the Leaning Tower of Pisa with these frames? Like, come on. But again, they just kind of pushed this to the back of their minds because they couldn't reason it away. So they just kind of were like, something must have just weird happened. It's fine. Whatevs. But one night, Isabella ran to Brian, her dad, and told him that there is a white face in the window. So he grabbed Isabella, ran to the room, and he saw a white blur of a face in the window, and then it disappeared. So he told Isabella to stay there while he went and checked it out outside, thinking it might have been a creepy man or whoever, like a neighborhood kid, something. But he couldn't find anything or anyone. Now, Laurel and Brian talked about it, and they said that Brian's mom, Judy, should take Isabella and just have her for the weekend. And they wanted to try to change the feeling of the house, starting by doing a little makeover in Isabella's room. So while she was gone, they painted the walls with like soft, warm colors. And Laurel did a mural of Wizard of Oz. And with this change, she said that, you know, she felt a difference in the room. So Judy, the grandmother, brought Isabella back over after the weekend, and they went and like had that surprise reveal for, and everyone loved the Wizard of Oz, and Laurel felt really good, like having Judy's seal of approval too. And so they were just like kind of in the living room talking and had left Isabel in her room. Laurel went back to Isabella's room, and she found that in the mere minutes that they had been talking, all the furniture was just kind of thrown around, like the Hulk, Tasmanian Devil, or Carrie had entered the room, not a five-year-old little kid. So Laurel was furious, even though she didn't understand how she could have like moved all this furniture by herself and like wrecked this room. She was just so mad because all the hard work she had put in, like, you know, her weekend warrior of DIY, like was all messed up and in a matter of fucking minutes. And she just pleaded with Isabella to tell her like what she did, why she did it, you know, but Isabella just kept repeating that it wasn't her, it was Emily. Well, that night, Brian said that he was tossing and turning, and he just kept feeling like he was being watched again. And he couldn't sleep because he said he just kept wondering, like, why is this happening? What's he going to see or hear next? Just filled with anxiety. So it really was affecting everyone's mental health at this point. Now, Judy, his mother, hadn't really thought anything of it until she was giving Isabella a bath one night. And she said that Isabella was just acting differently. And that's when Isabella just looked at Judy and asked her, like, Nana, can I tell you a secret? And Judy was like, of course, you can tell your grandma anything. Like, go ahead. And Judy said that Isabella just kind of looked up at her, and she said that Emily had told her to go out the window, but she was scared to do it, like her bedroom window, which is on the second floor. But Emily urged her to do it and said that she would catch her, like, jump out the window and I'll catch you. But Isabella was still scared. So Judy couldn't even control it. She started crying and told Isabella that it was dangerous, that she did the right thing by not going out the window, you know, and like if she did, she could get really hurt or worse, die. And so she's like, wait, I didn't think this was a big deal, but now like she's not talking about just like fucking up shit in the house. She's talking about jumping out a window on the second floor. So of course, Judy told her son and Laurel. And so Brian was like, all right, hold this because I'm going to get screws. And he nailed all the windows shut on the second floor as a precaution. And he said, like, he didn't know if he was doing the right thing or not, because if there was a fire or anything, he wouldn't be able to get out that window. He was like, so he was trying to weigh the.
Yeah, but the odds of the fire versus the odds of this kid who tells you is being fucking told to jump out of a window, I'd take that risk.
Right. And so, he again was just filled with this anxiety and like uncertainty, mm-hmm. you know, but he was just like, you know what? Mm-mm. Like if Isabella gets out of that window on her own, like
he'll never forgive himself.
Yep. You know, he said, at least knowing the windows were boarded up, they wouldn't be scared about leaving her in her room. But that didn't stop Emily from trying to hurt Isabella. So Isabella wasn't allowed in the basement. That was like, you know, the no-go zone of their house. But one night, the door was shut to the basement and Isabella and Laurel were in the dining room where you could see the basement, like the door was right there. And all of a sudden, Laurel had her back turned to the basement door, but she heard it open and then slam shut again. So she, of course, looked because why is Isabella touching that fucking door? Because she's not supposed to. But that's when she saw Isabella being like pulled down the stairs. It looked like she was falling, basically. And when she ran down there, Isabella said that Emily had pulled her down the steps. And like she's laying at the bottom of the steps of this basement. And so this was the last straw. Even though Laurel didn't know how to battle something she couldn't see, she knew she needed help. And now like this is like the second thing that's been harmful for Isabella. So Laurel and Brian were at their wit's end and they turned to a medium. The medium came to the house while Isabella was out with Judy, you know, like she did another weekend with her. And the medium said that she needed to do an investigation. So she started, you know, going around. And when she got to Isabella's room, she started to sing Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Fuck that.
Right. And so she's like sitting on the floor, just kind of staring into nothingness while singing this. And so Brian and Laurel are stunned because no one had told the medium about this song. And again, it's not like it was the theme of her room or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, the medium's voice got deeper and it sounded manly. And it said to get all the Bibles out of the house. Like, it's not going to talk to them until the Bibles are out. So they were like, okay, say less. So they went and got their two family Bibles and put them outside. However, when they got back to Isabella's room, the medium said that there was another one and just kept saying, get the Bibles out, get the Bibles out. And then she looked at them and said, he will not talk until you get the Bibles out. And they're like, what the fuck? Who's a he? And what's going on? So they just like went through Isabella's room. And they found another Bible that they had no idea wasn't theirs, you know? So they threw that outside too. The medium then told them that he hates Laurel and he hates Isabella. And they're like, wait, who is he? And just like you always say, Carrie, a kid's not really a kid. Mm-hmm. And it was a man who had manifested himself as a little girl. So she said there were actually three spirits, but the man was the evil one and he hated them and he wanted them gone. The medium then like, you know, did her little thing, but she said, yeah, I helped him cross over and everything should be fine. So they're like, cool. That's scary as fuck, but like, awesome. So fast forward again and Isabella's in her bed. Now Brian's in the living room by himself and he lit some candles because he's like Colby is. He wants it to smell good.
Colby is obsessed with candles.
He is. And I love it. But when Brian turned away from one of the candles and was walking over to light the other one, the candle flew across the room and like splattered on the wall. And it was a red candle. And he's like, fuck, that looks like blood again. Like, why is it doing this? And then he was like, wait, something threw a candle across the room. This is really turning violent. And he was like, the medium didn't help anyone cross over. They're still here. Because they had that false sense of security. Mm-hmm. Because also, like, she was legit in knowing the Mary had the little lamb, knowing about that other Bible, like, all of that. So they did believe that she had helped these people cross over and that they were going to be in the clear.
Well, and she may very well have actually thought that she did.
Yeah.
They could have fooled her.
Right. And she could have helped the other two spirits and the evil one just like stuck around. You know, you never know.
And just like hid and was like, ha.
Right. Laurel was upstairs on the phone with her mom, and they were discussing, like, leaving the house and just, like, it's just so much, you know, but she's like, I don't know where to go. Like, where do we go? Even though the house was, you know, like, cheaper than the other houses and stuff, they still sunk a lot of money into it. They did the repairs and, you know, all of that. But just then, out of the corner of her eye, Laurel saw Isabella's toy chest that was in their room fly across the room and hit the wall. And no one was there to do that. And it was not like a huge chest, but it was substantial.
Right.
You know? So Laurel was like, you know what? Nope. Definitely fucking done with this house. I don't know what to do. She said it was like living with a ticking bomb, a ticking time bomb. So later that night, you know, Laurel and Brian were like, okay, you know, like, we're going to figure out what to do. We're going to leave this house. Like, it's getting worse. So Laurel was asleep. Brian was asleep, but then he woke up. He was laying in the bed, again, just being so full of anxiety and stuff. But it was like he wasn't really awake. He just remembers, like, he wasn't in control. And the next thing that Laurel knew is that she was woke up by being choked by Brian. And she said it was like he couldn't stop. Like, even though he wanted to, he had this, like, dead stare at her. And finally, Laurel got away, but Brian was quick to catch up to her. He pinned her against the wall, and he ended up lifting her with one hand up against the wall, like, off the floor. And he was choking her again, but she wrangled herself away. And so she ran outside, and, like, he was running after her, and then he just, like, stopped. And when she looked back, he was there again, but, like, he had stopped. And instead, he was, like, crying and asking what was wrong. And he said that he didn't have any power to stop what was going on with him, but now he felt like himself. And that night, Laurel was like, you know what? We're fucking done. Like, she wholeheartedly was like, Brian's never touched me before. This is so out of character. Like, I didn't even know what was happening because it's never been this way. Yeah. I've never been scared of him. And that wasn't him. She just fell to her knees and just, like, let out all her anger and screamed, like, you've won. The house is yours. Like, you've won. You, like, take it. So the next day, August 17th, 2010, so they lasted 2 years, they fled their house. They left. Brian's aunt said that they could stay with her. And she was like, y'all should have told me about this long before. But they were like, it's fine. We're coming now. Like, we're doing it now. And they left everything behind. Brian said he didn't want to take anything for the fear of something being attached mm-hmm. to it. He's like, we can, you know, do whatever. We will build again, you know? Laurel said that they lost a lot, but at least they had each other. They had made it out of that house safely. Now, I do want to note that the owners after them, they only lasted a few months. And the only thing that they had said is that, like, the pictures were coming off the walls again. So I don't know. But I do want to say that the Perimsky family made sure that they were supporting each other. You know, they were slowly building their lives back to normal. Isabella didn't have any other paranormal experiences since Emily. Like, after the show, because this was on an episode of Paranormal Witness, it was actually season 1, episode 1. But after the show, you know, they do like a recap, basically. And Laurel said that Isabella was so happy. She instantly felt happy at their new house. And she even mentioned when they first got into her new house that it was a good house and that Emily wasn't there. Laurel said that even though Isabella was young, she still remembers a bit and would sometimes ask, like, are we about to talk about Emily again? And Laurel would be like, no, we said goodbye to her. We're not talking to her again. In that interview with the Paranormal Witness crew, the year later, they ask, like, if you could turn back the hands of time, would you have handled things differently? Laurel said, absolutely. Like, she would have handled everything differently, starting with believing her daughter sooner. And she said that it wouldn't have mattered the cost. She would have gotten out of that home sooner. And that's something that she deeply regrets. Brian said, you couldn't have paid him $1 million to step back into that house. Like, he was done and he was that scared of it. Now, however, their life wasn't free from tragedy after this. Laurel, the mom, she died July 3rd, 2020. And then Brian died November 18th, 2023. And I don't know about Isabella. Like, I couldn't find an update on her, but I'm hoping that she's thriving.
Do we know from what?
No, I couldn't find anything about it more than that, like that they had died.
Holy fuck. Damn, that's sad.
It is. And it's really weird, like, watching something where you then find out that they're no longer there, you know? And it's just like when you're watching something and then it's like dedicated to, you know, XYZ. And it's like, oh, wait, they died? Like, it's so much more special. Then you get to hear it in their own words and all of that. And like, they're no longer alive to tell this story.
But also, like, what happened to the kid? And I don't know. That's so sad.
It really is. But if you think about it, like, they moved out in 2010. She died 10 years later. So
it's almost like the turmoil, like, ate him up in, from the inside.
Yeah. And then Isabella lost her dad 3 years after that. Like, that's a lot.
Wonder if it was COVID.
Oh, fuck. I didn't even think about that. A ghost couldn't take him out.
I wonder how they sold the house, too. Like, did they tell the people, hey, by the by, the shit's haunted?
Probably not. Which is a whole ethical thing, but also you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, I feel like you should tell.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to because that would eat me up inside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really would.
Me too.
Like, I think I would become obsessed with the house and obsessed with them, and, like, that would not lead anywhere nice. They might have told, and some people are like, okay.
Yeah, and some people are into it.
Yeah, some people are into it, and then the others are going to be like, okay, you're weird as fuck, but, like, we're getting a cheap house. Awesome. You know? And they don't believe anything's going to happen to them. I know we've talked about this before, but I think I said I had an imaginary friend, but I never really did.
Yeah, I said one time I did, but I didn't either.
Yeah, like, I mean, again, did I have imaginary boyfriend? Like, but it would be like, I knew he wasn't real.
Yeah, it was like, it was just pretending. Like, it wasn't like a...
Like, I didn't say, like, oh, no, like, please get another sandwich for this person. Like,
yes, it was never that.
No.
I think one time I said that at dinner, and then I was like, this is stupid. Give me the food.
Yeah, so, like, I just never had that, so I don't know what it is. But I never feel like an imaginary friend is a cute thing either, though.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, uh-uh.
Yeah.
That's fucking weird.
Yeah, well, your mom read you Goosebumps.
What?
Goosebumps.
Yes. That's the great value version.
Okay, so my story this week came from a recommendation from Creep Mom, and we are talking about the Weyerhaeuser family. Although I heard people call it Weyerhaeuser, but I think it's Weyerhaeuser. But it's like Weyerhaeuser.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So apologies if I'm saying this wrong. Have you ever heard of this family?
No.
Okay, so the original, like, great-grandfather of this family is, like, number 12 on the richest people ever in America. Like, only, like, he's beat by, like, Bill Gates.
Shit.
Okay. So, the Weyerhaeuser family is, like, the biggest timber company in America.
I thought you were going to say they have a lot of warehouses.
No. They have, like, the biggest timber company in America. And, like, own shit tons of land. But they were also very private. So when they really started getting their money, picture like the Vanderbilts, the, you know, like the Rockefellers, like all of that. But they chose to stay more private and be on the West Coast, like the Tacoma area, Washington, versus being like in the limelight.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people don't know this family, but like today, this family is still worth $1.7 billion.
Holy shit.
Right.
So when does this story take place?
Okay, so the story that we're talking about takes place in 1935.
Okay. Also, let me insert here that Carrie said she was listening to the edit, the last story where I was like so confused that the kid was like born in 1995 or something.
1993, but, yeah.
And but like I kept thinking it was 1993, and she
that
like,
the story took place,
and she was like, "No, God, why did you think that?" Well, she was like, "Upon listening to the edit, I said it a lot of times."
Yeah, I literally said, "I mean, in 1993, the internet, blah blah blah," and I was like, "No, you dumbass, that's when he was born. No wonder Donna was confused."
I was like, "Okay, thank you."
I took a lot of my fuck ups out, just by the by. Really, really made myself look great. Okay, so this family, like I said, all the money to make things happen.
Uh-huh, all the land, all the things.
Yeah, I heard on this one podcast, because there is a book about this, but the podcast I heard this on was called Most Notorious, but a guy named Brian Johnson wrote the book that he could, like, they interview him on, but he was saying, like, part of how they got their money was that great-granddaddy had bought all this land, and then the railroad had to come through. So the railroad bought all this land from him in the middle of all this timber. So anyway, they just got bills on top of bills on top of bills. And I mean, hundreds, not past due.
Right. Yeah. We don't know that.
No. Okay. So picture it. May 24th, 1935. So George Weyerhaeuser is 9 years old. So he is like, there's great granddaddy, granddaddy, daddy, and him.
You've never sounded more country.
So he's at school. This is in Tacoma, Washington. You know, it's 1935. I feel like even up until probably 20, 30 years ago, people would like leave school for lunch. So what he would normally do is walk from his elementary school over to his sister's elementary school.
I love that you said like 20, 30 years ago. Ma'am, we were in school 20 years ago and no one left for lunch.
That's why I said 30.
Okay, you said 20 or 30. I'm just saying.
Some may have.
We old as fuck.
Okay, so he would usually, like I said, leave his school, go meet his sister, whose name was Anne.
But he's like 9 years old.
Yeah, but I mean, it's 1935. People just did shit back then.
Yeah, true.
I mean, like, 9-year-olds worked in factories.
That's very true.
Also, keep in mind that this story takes place like 2 years after the Lindbergh baby drama. So like I said, for the 14th time, he would go meet his sister Anne, and then they would be driven home by their fucking chauffeur because they got money. So he gets out of school, starts to walk to meet his sister, but he was early. And so he was just like waiting around. He was like, this is fucking dumb. I'm going to just go home because it's like half a mile for him. So he's like, I'm just going to walk home. So he goes to walk home and he's like 2 blocks away from his house when a guy sitting in this car gets out and is like, hey, can you tell me how to get to Stadium Way?
Literally thought you were going to say Sesame Street, but okay.
So George is like, sure, it's... And the guy kidnaps him and throws him in the car.
Oh, fuck.
They cover him up with a blanket and drive away. While all this is happening, the chauffeur gets Anne and is like, where the fuck is George? So they're kind of driving around looking for him. They go on to the house. Then they're like, okay, he's not at the house. So they like really start looking for him. And then they call the school and they find out that George isn't there. So that's when all hell breaks loose because, again, remember, this is 2 years after the Lindbergh baby incident.
You know that chauffeur, like his butt was puckered.
This is also right around the time, I really recommend that you go listen to that podcast I told you about because that's
notorious.
Yeah, because the author, I mean, obviously this is about a kidnapping now. I just didn't want to give you the title of the book. It's called The George Weyerhaeuser Kidnapping. But he does a really good job of talking about like the historical context happening in the time because the FBI had really just kind of been formed. You know, there was a lot kind of happening with that. Again, you'd had this big uptake in kidnappings because they had kind of just gotten past the like more gangster era coming out of the Great Depression and all of that. So there's just a lot of historical context to this story.
Also, like the most boring title for a book, but I'm like, damn, that's good SEO.
But he said too, like when he started to do this, that's not the name of the book.
Oh my God.
That's the name of the episode.
Oh, my God.
It's called Deep in the Woods, the 1935 kidnapping of 9-year-old George Weyerhaeuser, heir to America's mightiest timber dynasty.
Okay, well, that also is great SEO because good God.
Remember that time that I was a first-time podcaster? Oy vey.
Well, I'm glad that I had said something about the title.
And I was like, I don't think that's right. That literally sounded like an article title, like a research article title, because those titles are so goddamn long.
Yes. I'll tell you what else is long. Names for cannabis items. When you're having to look through it, because it's like they want to have all the stuff for you to know. Yeah. And I'm like, good Lord. It is like, what the fuck is this name? But I mean, it all makes sense, but it's seriously like 18 fucking words sometimes, you know?
All that to say, too, about the FBI is that they got involved kind of quickly with this. And I feel like the FBI kind of had something to prove, too, because it's a little bit newer, all the things.
Well, and this kid is worth a lot.
Right. So the family ended up getting a letter. That evening, a postal carrier came in with, like, special delivery.
A postal carrier?
You know what? I was channeling 1935.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But anyway, the letter was addressed to whom it may concern, and it was a ransom demand. They wanted $200,000 in small, unmarked bills, and the letter that it came in, like the envelope, they had had George sign the back of it. So, like, proof of life, all of that, because, you know, you can't just be like, send me a video of him holding today's newspaper.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in today's money, that's like $4 million.
Holy fuck.
Yeah. The author was saying, like, to put it in context, like, a new house back then, like, a good new house was $6,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and the average person made like $1,200 to $1,500 a year.
Wow.
So, like, it would have been, like, this was the same amount of money as someone working for like 135 years.
Yeah, like, this was unheard of.
Right. I think the Lindbergh baby ransom was like $50,000.
Holy shit.
Just to kind of put how big this was into perspective. Now, the kidnappers did give them time. They said, you have 5 days to get the money together, or like as soon as you have it. And how you're going to let us know is in the personal ads, you're going to put an ad that says, we are ready, and sign it, Percy Minnie. Never find out like what the purpose, like where Percy Minnie came in. Like, it basically was like, they kind of liked the way it sounded. And then they signed the note, egoist, whatever the fuck that means.
Okay.
So the FBI was really involved.
Also, I just feel like this is me as a kidnapper. Like, you have 5 days, or I mean, is however long it is, because I really just need the money. So
right. Well, it's like, okay, we're giving you 5 days. Like, that's your cutoff. But if you get it before then, hit a sister up. You know what I mean?
Okay. Okay. I thought you meant like you have 5 days.
No.
Or
no. 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 As like that's your max. But if you get it before then, let us know.
Okay. Okay.
Again, because of the Lindbergh stuff, they had the new Federal Kidnapping Act, all of that made it a felony to make threats like that through the Postal Service. So again, FBI is involved. But the Weyerhaeuser family was like, no, you're out of this. Like, they don't want cops involved. They don't want media involved. We don't either, because we're very private people. So you let us handle it and then you can do your thing. Which, if I was watching a TV show, I would be like, the FBI knows what they're doing. Let them help you. But, you know, they were like, absolutely not. And also, the FBI was new. So the family gets the money together. It took them some days because, again, $200,000 in small bills, it was like 20,000 pieces of cash, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, they like, I just picture this because they got all the serial numbers. Like, can't you just picture them? Like, they probably literally had to handwrite out the serial numbers to keep track of them.
The cramp, my hand would cramp.
But they made the list and they were actually able to put them out to post offices, banks, like all the like railways, all the places that would possibly be getting this money for like exchange or, you know, to buy tickets out of Tacoma, you know, all the things. So they actually were able to make a list of like a, you know, they just Xerox it, I guess, registered trademark. So on May 25th, like the very next day, they posted in the classifieds, like, we expect to be ready on Monday, basically. We're dying inside, but, you know, we'll be ready, Percy Minnie. It took them until Tuesday, May 28th to get the money together. They placed the ad that literally said what they wanted, We're ready, Percy Minnie. The next day, the family got a letter from the kidnappers. They said for him to go register at 7 p.m. at the Ambassador Hotel, this address in Seattle. Do it under the name James Paul Jones and sit there and wait. There was a note that George had, like a handwritten note from George with that. So again, like proof of life. So George's dad did exactly that. And at 9:45 that night, a taxi cab driver handed him another letter at the hotel. So I'm sure they just paid some guy off to go in and hand it to him. The letter gave him another address to drive to. And it said that look for like a stake with a white cloth attached to it on the side of the road. So when he got there, he found the white cloth and under it, it had a note like in a tin can that gave him directions to go to another white cloth 700 feet away from it.
I understand the need for all of this, but I'm like, that is like having a gift in a box within a box within a box within a box. I'd be like, can you just show me where the kid is? Here's my money.
Well, okay. So he couldn't find the next box.
Oh, shit.
So he like, because again, it's nighttime.
Yeah.
Like he's like crawling around trying to fucking find it and cannot fucking find it.
The level of anxiety.
Can you fucking imagine?
No.
The next day, like he has to leave. Like he's literally, I'm talking like 3 hours trying to find this thing. Well, the next morning, about 11:30, he gets a phone call at the hotel being like, why the fuck didn't you do what we said? And he's like, I couldn't fucking find it. And they're like, okay, you're going to be contacted with new instructions and this is your last fucking chance. Like, get it right or we're going to hurt your kid. So he got another phone call at 9 p.m., a guy with a European accent, whatever the fuck that means. And it told him to, again, drive to a certain location, look for a tin can, which he did. And it gave him another note with more instructions. So it told him to go to this other place, Angle Lake. And then once he gets to the lake, turn on a very specific road, and he'll have more cans telling him what to do.
Could you imagine if they accidentally misspelled it and put Angel Lake?
Well, I panicked going, did I just say the correct one?
Oh.
It's L-E, so it's Angle.
Yeah. But could you imagine since like he couldn't find it the first time and then it's a misspelling? Like,
so this time he was able to like follow the literal white flags. And the last thing it told him to do was to pull up, turn the dome light on in his car, leave his car running with the money in it, and get out and start walking the opposite direction. He does just that. And as he's walking away, he hears a noise and he kind of turns around and he sees this guy jump in his car and speed off with it. So like it worked, like they got their money.
Oh my God. Was it someone else? It wasn't.
No, it was. Oh, okay. This is it. No, they really got their money.
Like I am like, is this just a comedy of errors of this?
I mean,
guy
it is
trying to get his kid back.
Right. It is. But also no.
Okay.
The kidnappers kept their word. They did not hurt George. So the kidnappers go back to George, put him in the car, drive him about 4 miles south, and let him out with a blanket and a dollar. And they're like, your dad will be here soon. Well, as Tiffany says, ended up winding up. Dad didn't know where he was. Dad had just done the ransom drop and was just like twiddling his thumbs, waiting, going, I don't know what the fuck to do now. George, who had done so great this whole time, because the kidnappers told him, like, if you don't try to run, we're not going to hurt you. Like, we just want the ransom. Like, just do what we say and we're not going to hurt you. So he's like, it's raining. I've been here for like 2 hours waiting. Bet dad doesn't even know where I am. So he starts walking and he walks for 6 miles before he actually finds a farmhouse. So keep in mind, this is like 5 fucking a.m., like 6 a.m. at the latest. So he like knocks on this door and luckily it's a fucking farmer. So he's up and the guy opens the door and George tells him who he is. And like at this point it was all over the news because this was huge, big deal, very wealthy family. Everybody knew who George was and that he had been kidnapped. So the man immediately knew what was going on, brought him in, they fed him, put him in some clean clothes, dry clothes, and then put him in the car to take him home. It was like quite a bit of a drive from where they were. So they had stopped at a gas station and asked them, hey, can you call this, like, can you call the house and tell them we're on our way? Because, you know, it was like, how may I direct your call? Like, it was that kind of thing back then. Well, when they called the house, there was no answer.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I heard this from the author, this part. I didn't see this part in any of the articles, but I did from this author guy, that the FBI had a phone system set up and it wasn't working.
Oh, my gosh.
So on the home end, it rang once and stopped. On the caller's end, it was like steadily ringing and just nobody was answering. So like the phone system fucked up.
Yeah.
So they ended up calling the police department, the Tacoma Police Department, and was like, hey, we've got George. He's safe. We're on our way.
God, the anxiety this has. Like,
so the media frenzy around this was fucking ridiculous. A news reporter had come and found George and tried to interview him before his family had even seen him.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No.
This is where, like, decency just comes in.
Right? And, like, they're so fucking private. And, like, years later, when George is interviewed, he's like, that was the hardest part of all. Like, people, you know, everybody else had a harder time with the kidnapping than I did, which I think he's minimizing a little bit in order to, you know,
right,
live his life.
Yeah.
But, because, I mean, he was kidnapped 8 fucking days.
Yeah.
And even though they were not terrible to him and, you know, he wasn't, it doesn't seem like he was abused and he wasn't like physically or sexually assaulted. He was still kidnapped for 8 days, you know?
Yeah.
But he said that, like, all of the media coverage and them just being in his face was so overwhelming. And that was like the hardest part for him.
Like, I understand wanting to get the story out and all of that. And, you know, the pressure for you to have this performance and, you know, all of that. But it's like, when it's something like this, how can you just hound someone, especially a kid?
I know.
But also just like in any case, like reporters being outside and just like you go outside and they're like, comment, comment, comment. It's like these people lost someone or, you know, there's a tragedy here. I don't know. Ugh.
So this is George's account. He says that, you know, like we said, that day he'd taken some shortcuts going home when someone pulled up and asked him for directions. There was another man in the front seat of the car. So it was two men who had kidnapped him. They put him in the back seat and covered him with a blanket. Now, this fucking kid is so smart that he was like, okay, let me see where they take me. Because they had him covered, but he was like, okay, how fast are they driving? Like, how long are we in the car? So he knew he was in the car for about an hour. He knew that they were in high gear, and that, so they were going fast on like a good paved road. And then he was listening to them talk, like what names they were using, all the things. I'm like, damn, this kid's so smart. And he hadn't even seen the movie Taken.
Right? Literally me, if that was me, like, I would have fallen asleep. There's no way I could stay awake in a car.
I have no concept of time.
Me
in
either.
That way. Like, I mean, because I'm such a fucking weird kid. When I was a kid, I would think about, if I was on an island, how would I know what time of day it was? And I was like, okay, I could sit there and just count and be like, 1, 2. But then how would you know how many minutes it's been? And then I'll be like, 2, 1, 2, 3. 3, 2, 1, 2, 3. And then I would try it.
Yeah.
And then I would lose count and I would go, what the fuck? How long has it been?
Yeah. I used to do not that because of too many numbers for me, but to be like, would I remember how to get somewhere? So I'd be like, they took a right, they took a left, 2 lefts, 1 right. You know, no.
No, absolutely not.
Ever.
George does tell how after they had driven for a little while, they stopped a car, took the blanket off, and made him write his name in pencil on the back of the envelope, and then blindfolded him, and then carried him 10 or 12 steps. And then he was like, I think we waded across some, like, a stream, because he could hear water. What they had done was they had previously dug a big hole in the ground, like a pretty fucking big hole. So they had put him in this hole and basically left him there for a long time, handcuffed in this hole. Like, they would take turns watching to make sure, you know, he couldn't get out, all the things. But then they started getting nervous. They were like, somebody's going to find this hole. Like, we got to move on. Like, somebody's going to find this hole. So they took him back in the car, put him in the trunk, and they took him to another place. And he had to sit there while they dug a hole. Then it was like, we got to move him again. So this is where they fucked up big time. Because now there was two men and a woman. And they took him in the car. But they had driven through, like, in Washington state, you know, but they had actually driven through Idaho for a little bit. Like, didn't spend the night or anything, but drove through there and then went back into Washington. So now they've crossed state lines.
Oh, shit.
So now it's, like, big time felony. At some point, though, they ended up taking him into a house that they, I think they were, like, renting. And he had, like, a mattress and all of that.
These people are so fucking weird. Who thinks of, like, I'm going to dig a big hole and the kid's going to sit in it?
Right.
You know, like, that's a lot.
So he knew that they had been calling each other Bill and Harry. So after, of course, he comes home, this starts, like, the biggest manhunt in the Northwest history. Because it was, like, now the Weyerhaeusers were, like, go. Because, like, let us handle it before, but now run, you know? Like, you know, that TikTok sound where it's like,
literally,
run.
Yes, when you said that, I was like that. Yes. I knew it.
So the police ended up finding the vehicle that was taken to pay the ransom. They found the empty bag that the ransom was in, and they had found an empty can that was used to hold the notes. Well, those motherfuckers, there was a little bit of prints on those cans, so dumb. But it was June 2nd that the first $20 made an appearance in Huntington, Oregon, at a train station. A guy had used it to buy a ticket to Salt Lake City. And then another one was used to get a money order. So now they're starting to kind of see a trail. By June 7th, they had all of these different things from Salt Lake City that they were like, got them, like, they're in Salt Lake City. So, of course, they go and they find the first person was Margaret Von Metz. She was found with some of the ransom money. So she was married to Harmon Metz Wally. Now, he was a ex-convict. He was 24. She was just 19. Of course, they were like, we don't know what you're talking about. But when they searched their property, they found $3,700 in a stove that they had, like, tried to burn. Because it was like they had figured out police were on their track. I don't know. But they tried to burn it. And they were able to, like, find a couple of the serial numbers and be like, got it. Busted. So Harmon Wally was like, yeah, you know. Like, he just gave a bunch of different stories. But he finally came out and confessed. He said it was him and a guy named William Daynard that they had done it together. So they met in prison. William Daynard had, like, a 20-year sentence for bank robbery. But for some reason, he was, like, granted a pardon in Idaho and ended up being released. So that's how he got out of prison for this 20-fucking-year sentence. Well, Harmon Whaley was there for, like, a vagrancy charge. Like, he only had, like, 6 months. So in April of 1935, after they had both been released from prison, they, like, randomly ran into each other in Salt Lake City. And that's how they, like, developed this plan. It seems like Margaret didn't really know until she found out, like, after they had done it. And then she had kind of been a part of it. Because by all accounts, she thought that they were, like, doing actual work, but I think they had been, like, planning to rob places. And they had rented a house together in Spokane. And out of just pure dumb luck, Margaret was literally reading the newspaper and came across the obituary of John Philip Weyerhaeuser Sr. And in this, it talked about, like, how much money they had, blah, 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 blah. And some stuff says that she kind of got the idea. But then other stuff is like, she didn't really know until at one point they had the kid in the trunk and she heard him talking. Like, it wasn't until that point. So who knows? But what the two of them did was, once they figured out, like, it doesn't even matter which kid, but we got to kidnap one of them, that they started following them for a few days to try to kidnap. And it was just spur of the moment of, they saw George walking home and were like, this is our chance. So this was planned, but not clearly super planned very well.
Thankfully.
After Margaret and Harmon had been arrested, William had actually gone to Margaret's grandfather's house in Utah to pick up a suitcase. And that's when he found out that they had been arrested. So he fucking hit the road, Jack, and was literally on the run. Now, there were a couple of incidents where he like had almost was caught by the cops, like literally a foot chase one time and got away. And they found in a car, in a suitcase that he had left behind, like just over $15,000. And then they looked and it was like, okay, which they knew, but you know, like, let's compare the numbers. And it was the money. The husband and wife had told the FBI where they had buried some of the money. And so they were able to recover like $90,000 from them burying it. And basically, the husband was like, he gave William Daynard up because he had cheated him out of $5,000. And so he's like, if I'm going down, you're fucking going down.
There's no honor among thieves or whatever right. they said. But like, why would you try to fuck someone over that holds like your future in their hands too? Like,
So Harmon ends up pleading guilty. He gets sentenced to 45 years on kidnapping and 2 years for conspiracy for kidnapping. Now, they say he was sent to McNeil Island in Washington and then was later transferred to Alcatraz. So I don't really know which one he was at. Now, Margaret pleaded not guilty. So she went to trial, but the trial was only 4 days and she was found guilty and sentenced to serve 2 concurrent 20-year terms. But now it's like the fucking manhunt of all manhunts to find William Daynard. Well, they, of course, end up finding him, and they recovered just over $37,000 from him. And then they had $14,000 that he had buried in $100 bills in Utah. He ended up pleading guilty, and he was sentenced to 2 concurrent 60-year prison sentences. Now, he was sentenced to that McNeil Island, but then he ended up going to Leavenworth.
Okay, I know, like, they don't care about the money, but I'm really glad that they were able to recover.
Like, so much, yeah. So the guy that helped George, like when he walked to their farmhouse, they ended up giving that guy a lifetime employment at the mill. And he got enough money, like reward money, that he was able to purchase like several acres of land and build a new house. So I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah.
Margaret was...
I mean, they could have just gave him some of that money.
For real.
And not like, hey, here's a job. Like, don't teach me how to fish. I just want you to give me the fish, right? Okay?
Margaret was eventually released. She served 2/3 of her sentence. Divorced old Harmon. She ended up getting remarried, blah, blah, blah. Harmon was paroled after serving 28 years. And he actually, like, wrote the family a couple of times apologizing. And the family ended up giving him a job when he got out of prison.
Oh, shit.
Because they were like, look, they never hurt George. Like, he was 24 years old. He fucked up, like, and he lived to be, like, 73.
You mean to tell me that this motherfucker got a job who kidnapped their kid, and that's the reward that they gave the farmer?
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. But William Daynard, but he did actually get out later, and he died when he was 90. He died in 1992.
Holy fuck.
So there was another guy named Edward Fliss that had helped them, like, after and all, and so he was sentenced to, like, 10 years in prison. George Weyerhaeuser went on to live an amazing life. He went to Yale, and he was, like, the CEO of their family business for a long time and did really helped the business expand. And he passed away in 2022 at the age of 95.
Holy shit. How they live so long? That story was so much anxiety because it was a shit show.
I mean, it really was like a not so comedic comedy of errors.
Yeah.
Because it really is still somebody's life. And it's like, because it happened so long ago and we know he lived and all things, it's like, yeah. But also you have to think it still was a boy who was 9 years old.
Nine.
And kept for like 8 days.
Right. Over a week of not knowing. It doesn't matter that they didn't hurt him. They kidnapped him and he didn't know if they're going to hurt him or not.
And they had a gun. So it's like there was the fear and perception's reality. So yeah, they may not have hit him, but he was fearful enough that, I mean, he was fucking kidnapped. I mean.
Right. Yeah. Well, and how many times, especially now, it's like, we're not going to hurt you and they come in and kill you.
Right.
And you know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, we're not going to hurt you if you do what we say, but it's like, that's what everyone says. So you don't go, oh, perfect. I'm golden.
Yeah, I'm just going to sit here and chill on my week-long vacation. That ain't what happened.
Exactly.
Well, and two, you know, even now, you know, we hear with like the Ice Arrives and all of that, and they're like, never let them take you to a second location because the odds of you dying, like the percentages are like exponentially higher. And it's like, he beat the odds being transferred numerous times.
Right.
With clearly them freaking out a little bit because it was like, oh my God, they're going to find this hole. How the fuck they going to find that hole?
Right.
Like, that was the most random shit.
Yeah.
In the most random spot. Like, you're good, Pony Boy. You know?
Yeah.
Whew, this story. Like I said, it's like, it's lighthearted, air quotes, in that nobody dies and nobody was seriously physically injured. But also, I mean, I really do think that George later in his life tried to downplay a lot. Yeah. But I do think that it clearly had to have had an effect on him.
Oh, for sure. Gosh. I mean, how do you live after that, though? Like, how do you live as a family? I'd be like, where are you going? You have to have someone with you at all times. You know, like, I would be doing all the wrong things because I wouldn't want to lose them again. I wouldn't trust anyone. Like, the fact that they went on to have, like, a good life, all of them, and, like, not have such, like, a toxic thing, because I would have been toxic as fuck.
Right. Well, and they had a chauffeur, so it was, like, it was kind of in their minds, but also people didn't really know them because they were so private. So even though they did have all this money, they weren't extravagant with it. Like, even their houses, while they were nice, it wasn't like, you know what I mean? It wasn't the same as the big family names that you think about of the time.
Right.
Again, the Vanderbilts, the Rockefellers, I don't know, those are the only ones I could think of.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'd never even heard of this name. Now, if we were from the West Coast, I'm sure everybody in Washington's like, you've never heard of them.
Right.
And I probably fucking pronounced it wrong the whole time. But but you know what I mean? Like, they're probably like, you're fucking idiots. You've never heard of them.
Yeah. Well, and even though that they had the chauffeur, that's just like, you do it just because, like, you don't want your kids just walking around, or like, it's just easier to have them have someone. So I don't know if that's so much like someone might kidnap them. It's just like, don't let them be lollygagging around on the street and get hit. Don't let them. You know what I mean?
Well, okay, I know this is so weird, but, like, it reminds me about, like, so there's this family in Mississippi called the Duff family. They own, like, I don't know, all of Mississippi, and they're billionaires, and they, like, live in our town, and you'd never fucking know it.
Don't know who they are.
It's just so crazy that there's, like, hidden billionaires everywhere that you don't even really know, and it's like, we have somebody in our area that literally are billionaires and you'd never even know that they were here. You know, it's like, because people can have money and not be in the limelight.
Yeah.
Can I be one of those people?
Right.
I'm definitely not smart enough.
Me either. I literally told Carrie and Colby today, I was like, I only have $1,500 left on my car. Like, I'm so excited about that.
That's going to be like a huge raise for you.
Yes.
It will be, and then it won't be, because you're just going to put that money somewhere else. Because my car's paid off, too, and I'm like, I was super excited to get that money back every month, and now it's like, where the fuck did that money go?
Right.
But for the first few months, you're really going to notice a difference.
Yeah, I hope. But yeah, I saw it today because it got taken out of my account, you know, and I was like, let me just see how much I have left, because I thought it was like in November. I was like, 3 months, basically? Like, holy fuck.
That's awesome.
This is how, like, I am very happy that I'm able to pay off my car. But, like, we're talking about, like, wish we were billionaires, wish we were this. And I'm just like, my car's going to get paid off.
I know.
I can pay my other bill for my other loan that I have and all the things.
Colby's like, we need a pressure washer because ours bit the dust.
Oh, I was like, I thought y'all had one.
No, it bit the dust. He's like, we can just put it on the Lowe's card. And I'm like, oh, that Lowe's card is so high right now. You know, like, it's like that there's always something around the river bend.
Yes.
But we're thankful for what we have.
We really are.
And we're thankful for all of y'all. So thank y'all so much for listening to this episode and supporting us on Patreon and the sponsors who sponsor this podcast, because that's what keeps us rolling and helps us get this podcast edited and all the things. So really and truly, we really do appreciate everything that y'all do for us.
Yes.
With all of our appreciation, don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all the things, and remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.